All right, welcome back to another Yahoo Sports NBA podcast. Glad you could join me today. And we got a good show lined up for you. Bobby Marks, the front office insider for ESPN, former assistant GM of the Brooklyn Nets, he joins me. We go around the league a little bit. We talk about the Cavs and their potential trade issues in the aftermath of a pretty brutal last few weeks defensively. The news about Kemba Walker hitting the potential trade market. Markelle Fultz, what's the latest on him? And we look a little bit at the Trailblazers, what they might do, if anything, before the trade deadline. Stick around. Great talk with Bobby Marks. That's next. Let's go.
This is the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the mouth,
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
Joining me on the podcast this week, making one of his less frequent but still occasional appearances here on the pod, Bobby Marks, the former GM or assistant GM of the Brooklyn Nets and now the ESPN front office insider after leaving us here at Yahoo in the dust. What's up, Bobby?
Hello, Chris. How's it going?
Hey, man. It's the midseason point, Bobby, when things start to get fun. The Cavaliers are a train wreck. You know, you've already got some names out there on the trade market. This is the fun time of year for media and fans.
Well, thank God for the Orlando Magic, because yes. If it wasn't, this losing streak would be this would be a long one right now. But the Magic sandwiched in there with those two wins in Cleveland kind of has Cleveland in the three spot right now, kind of just holding on, taking on water and holding on.
Taking on water is right. All right, so let's get into that. The Cavaliers have lost five of the last six. This month, they have given up 127 points to Orlando, 127 points to Minnesota, 133 points to Toronto, and over the weekend, a whopping 148 to Oklahoma City. But to the Cavaliers truthers, all is well. Last week, several prominent Cavs players told multiple local outlets that this team does not have the talent to compete at the highest of levels. So what is the last few weeks, Bobby, tell you about the state of the Cavaliers?
Well, it tells you that they missed Kyrie Irving. I mean, that's one thing. And that's why I never really bought into the mantra that this is just another year and this team will click into gear once we get into February or March or when the playoffs start, because there is no Kyrie Irving. And it's taking Isaiah Thomas a long time to get back into form. If Isaiah was healthy, and this was the Isaiah Thomas in Boston, then I would say, yeah, you know, they'll be fine when they get to the playoffs. But will we ever get that Isaiah Thomas back that you saw in during last year? So I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. We can harp on their defense. I think their offense has led to their poor defense because they can't get back in transition. I think Ty Lue, and I know he came out and said he's not going to do anything. I think before Cleveland does any type of personnel decision as far as a trade, I think that you need to shake up the lineup to see what you have there. If that means getting Tristan Thompson back into the starting lineup, if it means putting J.R. Smith on the bench. So I think that's the options that you would need to look at. And if I was Kobe Altman, the general manager, and I know it's a tough spot being a rookie GM, I think that's a conversation. You never want to tell the coach who to play, but I think it's certainly a conversation because it would make Kobe's job a little bit easier here. So, but it will be interesting. We are about 2.5 weeks away from the deadline. They've got multiple options to go. You know, we'll talk about, you know, certainly that Brooklyn pick. They've got their own pick. I don't see how appealing outside of LeBron and even Kevin Love some of these contracts are. It's like if you're moving contracts to take you're probably taking back another bad contract. So if you're moving a Shumpert or Channing Frye and you're going out and you're going to try to get George Hill, let's say, well, then you have George Hill on a $19 million this year and $19 million next year. And then what do you do with Isaiah Thomas? So it doesn't really help, you know, the problems. It gets rid of some players. But David Griffin, the former GM of the Cavs, I was listening to him on radio, and he made a great point. And he said basically there's too many mouths to feed. I mean, this team is deep, but not deep enough to contribute on the court. They've got, basically 12 players to try to figure out how to put on the court. And their best stretch was when Shumpert was hurt, when Thompson was hurt, when they really shrunk the rotation down to 9 players.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And a few things I want to unpack on what you said. The comments that the players, the prominent players made directed at the front office. First, I've never really seen something like that before. I mean, you've been in this business on the executive side, but now the media. Have you ever seen like three outlets effectively get the same kind of line? Like several prominent Cavs players basically told ESPN, Cleveland.com, and The Athletic, the three guys that cover the team most prominently on a daily basis. I mean, this to me was very clear message sending from the top. That, I don't know why that, LeBron wouldn't put his name on it or whoever else was involved wouldn't put their names on it, but this was very clear message sending from the top that to the front office. And I'm wondering, what is the impact on the front office of these public comments from Cavs players that the roster isn't good enough?
Well, and it's also interesting from a team that's gone to the finals 3 years in a row, and it wasn't probably Isaiah Thomas or Jay Crowder, two of your new faces, and it wasn't probably Sadae Osman who came out and said that. Yeah. So you eliminate those three, and we can go down a list as far as who the returning group. So it had to be one of your core guys that have played in these finals the last 3 years to come out and say that. If I was Kobe and I heard that, I would be concerned, but I wouldn't be at the point where I need to go out and make a deal to satisfy the players on this roster. I think you have to look in the mirror here. I know this is the oldest team in the league. We can harp on that forever. But there is a stretch of games during the season when this team played well, but it was also against the softest part of your schedule. So, That's if you put your name to it and you said, you know what, at this time or in mid-January, this team is not good enough for, compete for a championship, that's fine. But to go out and kind of be that anonymous source and kind of hide behind things, that I think that's kind of the big issue. And I think they've already had one of those team meetings already. So how many more are you going to want of those?
It's surprising that, you have to assume LeBron was involved as one of the prominent players. You don't really write something like that unless LeBron James is in the middle of it. LeBron's been publicly critical of the roster in the past. Like, he has been, vocal about needing to get, another backup point guard from when it was just Kay Felder as the backup before to Kyrie Irving, to getting J.R. Smith signed to a new contract when he was going through what he had. It's a little surprising not to see LeBron just kind of publicly say, we need help. Like, we need to go out and get somebody. I don't know why he wouldn't put his own name to that, since he's not been shy about doing it in the past.
No, it hasn't. And it's every January, it seems, that he comes out and says that, not the roster isn't good enough, that we do need help. And last year, they were able to go out and get Kyle Korver in mid-January. I don't know how much help is coming unless you want to trade the Nets pick, because of what has been giving out in the past. There's a pick that goes out to Atlanta. I mean, we can go through to, I mean, Tyus Jones would be nice right now. I mean, they traded the rights to that pick to Minnesota a few years ago. We can, we know about Wiggins. They missed out on Bennett. So there's your past, you can look back, but you were able to be camouflaged because this roster is a built to win now roster. So, but now when you have some, now, as I say, when you have some holes in the boat and you start taking on water, then you could look back and say, well, I wish I had this and that, but you sacrificed that. I look at the true value is the 5.8 trade exception. And that comes with taking on a lot of luxury tax and the Nets pick. And that pick right now is 8. I talked to people close to that organization that feels that pick has more value when they get to June. So where it falls, there's not much of a gap between, I think, 5 and 11. There's like 2 games separated by those teams there. So, but the Nets team you think are going to go away are not. I mean, and you've been right. You've been on it. I mean, look at them against Miami. Look at them against Detroit on Sunday night. They play hard every night, and there's no incentive for this team to lose games to get a good draft pick because they don't have their own.
And that's always been my point with the Nets, in that, look, they may eventually have some problems getting from, like, good to really good. But their path from, you know, really bad to mediocre is, I think, easier than many other teams because of the roster and because of the coaching staff that they have. I mean, we'll see what Kenny Atkinson becomes as a coach when he's finally coaching a team of players that are built to compete for a top four spot in the conference. But for this group of players, Kenny Atkinson, who has got a history as an assistant of being a really top-level developmental guy, he's kind of done that. He's done that with some of these young guys, extracted as much as he can from some of these young guys. Now, he's got half a season to work with Jahlil Okafor and try to get something out of him. And now he's got D'Angelo Russell back. And Russell, in the first month, was a 20-point-per-game scorer and one of the best, bigger surprises in the first month of the season. So I've always been more along the lines of this Nets pick is going to be in that 11 range. And you're right, like that 5 to 11 is a lot of, you know, there's a very tight window in terms of wins that separate these teams. But as we progress into the season, the Nets are not going to be trying to lose, whereas like the Bulls, the Suns, maybe even, you know, the Hornets, if they're starting to bottom out, there'll be teams that are just mailing it in, whereas the Nets every single night are going to be trying to win because they have no reason not to.
Well, and that pick, you know, going back to having value in June, it's got to be in that. I mean, let's throw out top three, because there looks like Orlando, Atlanta, Sacramento. Those are your kind of your teams in that range. But if it's
three teams that absolutely want to be in that spot, like three teams that are going to stay in it, yes,
and will stay in that spot. I mean, we even thought Memphis was going to be in that spot, but they played a little bit better lately. But if that pick is 9 or 10 going into June, they'll get a good player, but not enough of a transcendent player to convince LeBron to stay. It will help if he leaves, but I mean, but you know, development. I mean, is there a Donovan Mitchell there at 10, 9, 10? I mean, you got to hope you nail one of those, and those don't come around. Those don't come around very often. So, you know, so what do you do? Do you look at teams like the Clippers? Do you talk about DeAndre Jordan and Lou Williams? The both of them together, as far as, but the Clippers don't want to take back Tristan Thompson. You know, if it was 2 years, that third year is the year when Los Angeles could potentially, you know, kind of have a lot of cap space to hit the reboot a little bit there. So, do you look at teams that have multiple players? Do you look at Avery Bradley and Stanley Johnson and combo guys instead of just that one name that we've all been, you know, I was teasing with you. I said, give me five names over the weekend. But maybe we start looking at teams that have multiple players that can help balance this. You know, can you get a defender and a, you know, another big? And so I think that's what Kobe is doing, is going through roster by roster. But Kristaps Porzingis, Karl Anthony Towns, Devin Booker, those guys are not available. Those guys are not available, and the Warrior roster and the Rocket roster is not available either. So, but it'd be interesting. And the other thing that hurts Chris is too is that the deadline has moved up to 2 weeks. I mean, if we added post All Star, you always know that 8-day gap gives you teams to kind of sit back and take a bigger dive into their roster.
Yeah, and this is, you know, where the value of experience in your front office, not just an experienced GM, but having experienced hands in that front office, you know, becomes huge. You know, people that have been through, you know, stuff like this before and can deal with this, because this is franchise changing here. What they do in Cleveland over the next few weeks is probably going to, you know, chart exactly what their next 5 years maybe looks like. If they move that pick, if they get an impact player, maybe they win the East once again, and maybe that's enough to convince LeBron to stay. If they don't, and this trend continues, that could be just enough to for LeBron to say, well, I clearly can't win here. We're all capped out. Boston's coming on. Like, I'm going to go find somewhere else to go and play. This is I don't think you can underscore enough how massive the next, 2.5-3 weeks are for this team.
Well, and they've got San Antonio at San Antonio on Tuesday.
Oh, the schedule's brutal. The next six games, it's brutal, yeah.
I mean, you got two against Detroit, who's kind of in a free-for-all. Indiana, Miami, Houston, Orlando in there again, Minnesota. And you've got a reactionary owner who reacts, I'm sure, based on wins and losses. And going back to the trade deadline moving up to February 8th, it's almost like the year when the remember that year with the strike shortened season and the deadline was like March 15th? It was like right during games. Like when you do it post All-Star, I think there's a Thursday or Friday game, but there's nothing before that. So you could have a team that has lost three in a row and are making reactionary trades. So that's why the difference in the deadline, and maybe Dan Gilbert's content saying, you know what, I want to rebuild. You know, I want to hit the reboot button and you know, hold on to this Nets pick and let's just roll out this roster, because how the East is shaping up, you know, Boston struggled a little bit lately. It's kind of I still think Cleveland certainly has a good chance to get out, but I think they will get steamrolled by any of these teams in the West. I mean, even Oklahoma City, if they ever got there. So is that you just want to get out now? Do you want to get out of the East, or you want to win a championship?
I think if you're that front office and you're Dan Gilbert, you have to really roll the dice on what you think that Nets pick is going to be. And, you know, you can get an impact player for that Nets pick. We can debate the range of impact, whether it is, you know, an Avery Bradley or somebody else. But you can get an impact player if you trade that Nets pick. And you've got to kind of think, like, you can say, all right, I really believe the Nets are going to be 11th pick in the draft, and it's worth giving up that pick to get a guy that's going to help us, guy in his 20s, who's going to help us, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years, including this season. Or they can decide, no, we believe the Nets are going to free fall, and we're going to put this thing in a lockbox and not give it away. That's just such a huge decision for those guys.
Well, you're right. I mean, I think you've got to go through the Nets schedule. I mean, you can start looking at things. I mean, it's a road heavy schedule in March, just because they've got a lot of events in that building. They have the ACC tournament there. So, but that team's already surpassed their wins on the road from the previous 2 years. They've got 8 wins. Last year they had 7, I think, to finish the year. So, you can play that guessing game. When you get into, but you only have two and a half weeks to kind of predict what the next 2 months are going to be. So that's where you say this is the range where it is. If we think it's going to be 10 to 11, then we probably should look to maybe move it. If we can get two players that can help the roster that we have, that we can have for next year and even the year after. The DeAndre Jordan thing is interesting, because you certainly have to have a conversation with Jeff Schwartz, his agent, and figure out, would he opt into his contract before the trade would be made? And if I can't go in there, Chris, with him knowing that he'll be a free agent, and basically it's you know, contingent on LeBron James going back, and you've lost him or Lou Williams to free agency, and you've got nothing in return. That's a career killer right there.
Yeah, I'm personally, Bobby, hoping that it does get traded out west, because then you would help teams coast to coast. You would have helped Boston on the East Coast and the Clippers on the West Coast. You'd be nationwide, my friend.
I feel so guilty when I talk about it. I keep on, like, I worked there for 20 years, and I was part of that front office that traded that pick, and it's like we should get t-shirts printed up. It's like the Brooklyn pick. I write about it. I talk about it. I go on SportsCenter and talk about it. I'm like, goodness gracious. I mean, now and soon it's going to be, we're going to shift gears, and we're going to talk about the Fultz pick, I guess, in Philly. Yeah. As far as that, when Boston gets the Kings' number one pick next, or a top three pick next year,
the Laker pick this year, 2019. Yeah,
that will be the new. It won't be the Brooklyn pick anymore after this year. It'll be the Fultz pick.
Yeah. All right. I want to get to that, but before we close the book on Cleveland here, David Blatt had a terrific troll the other night. The now coaching overseas. He was coaching in, I believe, an All-Star game over there, and he was doing an interview on the sidelines. And this is just after that Oklahoma City put up 148 on Cleveland. He said, you know, I hope we give up less points than the Cavaliers did last night. So Blatt, unprompted, took a shot at his former team. But Ty Lue is now coaching this team. And look, the buck oftentimes stops with the coach. They say you can't fire the players. I don't think Ty is in any trouble this season, but how much of this is going to be on him if this team comes up short at the end of the year?
Well, that David Blatt comment did not work out well for him, because I believe he gave up 151 in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
Ty Lue reminds me a lot of Byron Scott, mild mannered on the bench. Ty has not gotten a technical all year either, I believe. Players coach, lets the players kind of figure it out. Probably has an iron fist when the cameras aren't on him. And, So I would be stunned if Cleveland did anything with Ty Lue this year. I think he needs to figure it out himself. But if it does get to a point when ownership and the management group are recommending or advising him on far as what players or what kind of lineups, and he kind of puts his kind of fist down as far as what he wants to do, then I think if it doesn't work, then you maybe do look at a different direction. But I would be surprised if we see anything this year, even if this team continues to be up and down.
Yeah, I think there'll be a judgment on him at the end of the season for sure if they wind up getting beat in the conference finals. But for this year, I don't see any upside in letting him go. All right, let's move on. Your colleague and my former colleague, Adrian Wojnarowski, reporting that Kemba Walker has been made available by the Charlotte Hornets. Walker is the Hornets' best player down there, arguably. He's got 1 year left on his contract after this season, and Woj has been saying that the Hornets would like to attach Walker to one of their many, many bad contracts that they have.
Collateral damage.
Yeah, basically.
As
yes.
I
he's,
say.
He's the sweetener to take on the poison pill that they have on that roster. Gauge the market for me, Bobby, for a Kemba Walker. A bit of an undersized guy, but certainly a terrific pick-and-roll player. What's the market look like for Kemba Walker?
By himself? Great. Yeah. I mean, he's got a great contract. He's not even top 100 in the NBA in salary. He's 19th in among point guards. 12 this year, 12 next year. But you have to, if you are a team that's interested, if you are New York or if you are, let's say, Phoenix, two teams that could probably use a starting quality point guard, what do you want to take back with him as far as what the roster is? Is that a team that maybe Cleveland picks up the phone and because he's got some years left on, and if you figure if Isaiah is not part of the future, maybe that's a team. But I mean, Chris, you look at the their salary cap. You've got Batum, that is a monster contract. 4 years, $100 million left. Dwight's 2 for $48, and he's actually been pretty good. I know he's a pain in the rear end sometimes. Yeah. But the Batum contract is the kicker. If I'm Rich Cho, their general manager, who I'm trying to get rid of here. But and when they made all these signings, I didn't see anything wrong with it because they had come off the playoffs. They had to figure out either keeping Courtney Lee or Jeremy Lin, and they wound up picking Batum, Marvin Williams, and Kid Gilchrist was with his rookie extension. But it hasn't worked out. I mean, Batum has really regressed. I mean, he really has, and it's a big number. It's a huge number to take him on, because what happens if you are a team and if you take on Kemba Walker and you can't re-sign him, or he goes somewhere else after in free agency? Now you're stuck with Batum at $25 million and $27 million. Mm-hmm. So that's the risk, with Charlotte. I'd be surprised if he's moved. I think you're more looking at him in the off season if that's what they want to do. But as he would be going into an expiring contract, and expiring contracts rarely have value unless you have a real good feel that you can bring that player back.
Yeah, and the other part of trading him in the offseason is that perhaps you would give a new management group a chance to make that decision. I mean, Rich Cho, I believe, is on the last year of his deal, and I've been hearing some things, Bobby, across the league. I've even been hearing the name Mitch Kupchak come up a lot when it comes to Charlotte. There's some ties there from Mitch played at North Carolina. Obviously, he would bring some experience to the front office. I don't know exactly what role he would be in at this point, but I've been hearing a lot of connections for Kupchak and that Charlotte job. But if that's the case, if they are going to move in a different direction, it would make sense to let a new group make a decision on their most valuable asset. I mean, if you're going to trade Kemba Walker, you better make sure you get this right. You better make sure that the person making that deal is going to be around for a couple of years. I mean, it's that significant and that franchise altering. I mean, they've got a lot of decisions there. I mean, I think Steve Clifford is one of the best coaches in basketball. If they bring in new management, does management retain Clifford? I mean, that's a franchise, Bobby, that I could see go through a major upheaval this summer.
Well, they are top 12 in payroll. They will be top 12 in payroll next year. It's basically, it's going to be deja vu because you basically have the whole roster back except for, you know, Carter Williams and some of the minimum players. So they're not going to be a big player in free agency. And it's interesting because you talk about, you know, Mitch, as far as, you know, would they kind of, if they're going to look at a different management group, would they want to just kind of put the brakes to things and let them evaluate? Where in Mitch, when in LA, you know, he went out and signed Mozgov and Deng and those guys, and then they went out and did a, it's almost like the role reversal there. They went out and got, you know, Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka. So I think that's up to Michael Jordan as far as that, you know, have a role when during the trade deadline, if that is in the back of your mind that you are going to make a change, because the one thing you don't want to do is move your best player and a player who wants to be there. I mean, you saw the interviews with him, with Kemba. I mean, he was stunned by it because his name had never come up in I guess trade rumors before. But yeah, I mean, we thought Kid Gilchrist, you know, that, and it's still a decent contract. You could have got more out of him, but there are. You know, one of those vanilla type teams that are just kind of, you know, they compete, but they're just not good enough. And if they are good enough, it's going to be in that maybe that 7 or 8 range.
All right, so back to the folks over at Mattress Firm. Let's keep the ball rolling here, shall we? Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar, not your body. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run. And you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches of when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120 night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. A knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play. Now you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. All right, let's move on to a guy you mentioned before, Markelle Fultz, who is becoming one of the more fascinating stories of this season. Fultz played in the first few games of the year. The Sixers then shut him down with some shoulder problems. He's been back. He's been working out. But some of these like grainy Zapruder films you're seeing from cell phones, Bobby, show a jump shot that just continues to look awful. I mean, it looks like he's shooting like Chuck Hayes. Like if you go back and look at the way Chuck Hayes shot, he's shooting kind of in that sort of push shot type of manner. How worried should the Sixers be about Fultz and his broken jump shot? Which at this point, Brett Brown is out there saying like, you know, forget health. He's got to learn how to make a shot like that. Like Brett Brown is now admitting that this is the problem with Markelle Fultz. I mean, how worried should the Sixers be here?
He looks like me shooting jump shots with my glasses off. That's what he looks like.
I don't know what is going on. Like, so like I feel like hopefully it'll be me in the next couple of months. But if it's not me, it's somebody else. Like somebody needs to write like the definitive what the hell is going on with Markelle Fultz story. Like how did a guy who was a 40%+ 3-point shooter in college, how did he all of a sudden develop the Rick Ankiel case of the yips with his jump shot?
I know. And I don't want to overreact when we see those short videos on online, because you know, it's a couple jump shots. So I don't want to, you know, overreact, but it is a mystery where he was at college. Cause I mean, I was on Markelle. I mean, our guys, you know, Schmitz and Gavoni and those guys, I mean, they were high on them and I trust those guys, and just watching him play. I mean, he was a stud at Washington. I mean, a combo guard, good size, can play 1 and 2. And then like all of a sudden, like what happened? I mean, and I don't expect him going to the G League, Chris. I would be stunned if they sent him down there, because I would leave him totally exposed. I mean, if they're worried about, you know, 1 minute of video clips, and you know, compare that to go and play for the team in Delaware and playing for 40 minutes and really be exposed there. But that is if that pick doesn't work out, I mean, we tease a lot about the Brooklyn trade and the Boston trade. That is a killer to be able to what you gave up to move up 2 spots for Markelle Fultz, with giving up that Laker pick or possibly even that Sacramento pick, and then Tatum going to Boston at 3. I mean, that is I mean, you can recover from it because you've got Simmons and Embiid and Covington and that group. That group there, and you'll make the playoffs probably 6-7 there. But with a healthy Fultz at the level where he was at Washington or a Jason Tatum, that's the difference between being 6 and being in the top 4. Mm. You know, for a guy that's the number one pick, I of course we don't give up on him right now, but that is the most mysterious thing I've seen come across in a long time.
Okay, but your argument against sending him to the G League, is that just because, you know, people look at that they get a lot of film on him and see what's wrong? Because at some point he's got to start playing like full 5-on-5 in a competitive environment. And if he is fully healthy, and if this is just about like, you know, a screwed up jump shot, I mean, just let him go down there and burn for 35 minutes a night and see if he can rediscover his confidence kind of on the fly. I just don't think he can do it in practice. I don't think he can do it warming up before games. If that shoulder is fully healed and there's no problems physically, I would dump him down there and say, you know, let's go. Let's figure this thing out.
Well, if he's healthy, he should go. And even if it does leave him exposed a little bit, because you know, playing in a practice versus game type situation, although in a different league, is totally different. I would not want to roll him out there. And we've seen, I mean, if this kid was in San Antonio, he'd be in Austin right now playing. Yeah. We've seen a lot of teams take of their main players. You know, Kawhi Leonard went down to practice with them. So we've seen teams take advantage of it from an all-star veteran type player to be sent down there.
Jabari Parker's been up and down from there as he's trying to, you know, come back.
Yeah, and I don't know if anybody's asked Brett Brown that question as far as, you know, sending him down to play, or Brian Colangelo sending. I know they're very protective of the kid, so I don't know if that's ever been asked, but the longer this goes, the bigger, I mean, you can't, in this day and age, Chris, maybe in the 90s, you can't hide stuff. I mean, as far as for a player. So that's going to be a question that someone's going to need to ask. If post All-Star and he's not back, is there a plan for him to go play in the G League? And then we'll wait and hear what it is.
41% from three in college, 47.6% from the field in college, a 23-point per game scorer in college. This has been, and we are less than a year removed. This time last year, Bobby, we were all sitting back going, this kid is the guy. Like, this is, you know, he was just starting to separate himself from the field at the top of the draft. And I'm curious to know, and I haven't heard specifically from Boston on this, about how much of it was what they saw from Fultz in a workout and how much of it was how much they fell in love with Jason Tatum. I would bet it's a lot more of the latter, because Tatum kind of fits into what the Celtics are trying to do in terms of adding another score and have a ton of length and switchability on defense on the perimeter. But there has to be, you know, what went on from end of March to training camp when this shoulder thing and the shot thing kind of devolved. It's one of the more remarkable stories that I don't think has ever really fully been fleshed out at this point. I don't think anybody really knows exactly. It's like Tom Brady's thumb injury from last week. Nobody at the time knew exactly. It's Tom Brady's thumb spread out over 7 months is what it is. And nobody really knows exactly what happened there.
The only questions I had with Markel coming out of college was maybe some character issues if he bailed out on his team a little bit earlier down at the end of the year. That was really the only, I had really nothing to do with mechanics at all. It was just a little bit of character issues. And I mean, basically the debate was Fultz and Ball. I mean, that was really the debate. And then, you know, Tatum kind of caught on, you know, as the draft process went along. But I mean, Boston nailed that pick and got assets back, which is, you never do.
Incredible. Incredible. That's why Danny Ainge walks around the guard, big smile on his face every day. His team is the number one seed, and they're not even close to being where they're probably going to be in the next couple of years when Hayward comes back and these young guys continue to develop. All right, let's finish here in Portland. I want to talk about the Blazers for a second. Blazers right now, 25-21, right in the back end of that playoff bracket, but far from a real contender. You know, this is a team that doesn't have a lot of salary cap flexibility, Bobby. They get Yusuf Nurkic last year, and that was viewed as a big-time steal, and it was, you know, getting him from Portland and getting a first round pick back in return. But this is not a team right now that looks like, over the last couple of years, that looks like a true title contender. Do you think that Neil Olshey and that front office should look at breaking up that backcourt to kind of reinvent this team on the fly?
I think they should look at it when they get into the offseason. I don't think they should look at it going into the deadline, just because I want to see this team one more time. I think they over, getting to the second round, they probably exceeded expectations a couple of years ago when they lost, although they beat a Clipper team that had been injured, and then you lose to Golden State, and then you lose in the first round last year to the Warriors again. So it's still a team that I believe is top 10 in the NBA in average age as far as one of the youngest teams. What hurt Neil and that group is the summer of 16 with restricted free agency, where you had to go out and you went out with, and it's a good philosophy to go with if your players play well, where you had to, you overpaid Harkless, Myers Leonard. You got rid of the Allen Crabbe contract, but those guys, besides, Crabbe, those Myers Leonard really isn't tradable right now unless you attach something good to it. So that's usually the philosophy teams have, that you don't want to lose your guy in restricted free agency because you can't replace him. So let's sign him to a contract. Hopefully he plays well. And then we can put him on the market, and maybe we can get pieces back for them. And that has not been able to work out for them. The Lillard McCollum combination, I think I would want to give another, rest of the season for here, and then we get into the off season, and if it's another first round loss, which it probably would be, if you are, you never know if it's maybe they get San Antonio in a first round and San Antonio's kind of limping to the finish line, but you certainly have to look at it, because another team that has, you've got $111 million committed in your restricted free agents are Nurkic. Shabazz Napier's had a great year. Pat Connaughton, who's, has a role off the bench, and Noah Vonleh. So, is Paul Allen ready to go into the tax again for a team that's, 45 and 45 and 37. So, and McCollum's on a, it's a big contract, but he's got, after this year, he's got 3 years left. So, but I'm not ready to kind of throw in the towel yet on this Portland team. I'm willing to kind of let it go. Let's see how it goes through the next, three months here.
I'm with you on keeping it together for at least the rest of this season. But what they need is, for Zach Collins to work out. Now, he's been a rotation player this year, but they moved multiple draft picks to go up and get Zach Collins. They need him to be a starting caliber player to play alongside a Yusuf Nurkic. They need to hit on a guy, drafted 10th overall. I mean, they've got to hit on him, because they could have had a Donovan Mitchell. Not that he would have made a ton of sense on a team that already has two guards playing, 35, whatever it is, minutes a night. But, Zach Collins to me is the difference maker on that team. If he pans out and turns out in year two and year three to be a productive sort of, stretchy type of 4-5 man that can play alongside Nurkic, they might be able to continue to build, because McCollum is only 26. Damian Lillard, only 27. Both these guys are on, I believe, still long-term contracts. They can continue to build around that core, but they can't afford to whiff, Bobby, on a draft pick like a Zach Collins.
No, not in a draft when it's last year was, talent rich, when you had, I think they had 15 and 20 and moved to 10.
Yeah.
That's what they did. And then, Mitchell goes at, 13 to Utah. So, and I know they're high on Zach Collins. So yeah, you're right. You got to hit on these draft picks there, because you can have them for 4 years on their rookie contract and probably another four. So you have them for basically 8 years, and free agency is such unknown. But yeah, I mean, you can say the same thing with Denver, who traded, who got Trey Lyles and moved 13 and got, Tyler Lydon, right? The kid from Syracuse, I believe. And Lyles has played well, but you need him to play well to justify moving and not picking a Donovan Mitchell. To draft and then player development, it is so critical, and you cannot miss out on especially when you're a team that's in the luxury tax or going to be in the luxury tax, and you have so little wiggle room with roster restrictions. You got to hit on these picks, and that's why the teams like New Orleans and Washington, teams that are kind of fighting to get in and are going to be in the tax next year, especially if Cousins goes back to New Orleans, you can't be trading these picks. I mean, those are going to be your backbone as far as your next layer, and that's why that Wizard bench is kind of weak, and that New Orleans bench is weak, just because they don't have any guys they've drafted, and besides Kelly Oubre, they've drafted in the last couple of years here.
I know they don't have a choice not to transition at all to the Pelicans here, but I know they don't have a choice, but they're really going to wed themselves to DeMarcus Cousins, aren't they? Like, they're really going to throw the 5-year, $175-ish million dollar deal at DeMarcus Cousins.
What's your options?
But you're going to do it, and then...
Oh, you're going to do it, and then you are going to be mediocre. You're going to be a team. And then next year, we're going to hear about Anthony Davis not being happy when they're 24-20 at the trade deadline, and he's got, he's on another... He'll have another year left after, because he's got this year, and then he's got 2 years, and then there's an option there. And that's what we will hear about, because I think these guys are playing as good as they can. I mean, they're both voted in as starters, and they're at their highest level. And Drew Holiday's playing well. So what? I mean, are you relying on Solomon Hill to come back healthy? I mean, those two centers that can't play are not going to help you.
Zero flexibility in terms
and no of, flexibility. So that's why to trade a pick just to get in. And I think they'll get in the playoffs even if they don't do anything at the deadline. It doesn't make any sense, but yeah, when you make a trade like they did last February, and you give up a top five pick, and you give up Buddy Hield, who I think is more of a bench, rotational guy coming off your bench. I don't see him as a quality starter, but I think he can help you off your bench. That's the price as far as knowing that you're going to have to pay five years for 177, because I think there will be a market for it. It's not like there's not going to be a market for DeMarcus Cousins. I think the Lakers could be a landing spot. I think Dallas certainly could be a landing spot. So it's the Drew Holiday effect all over from last year. I mean, it's a little bit less money, but the Pelicans didn't have a choice to bring Holiday back, and you had to basically overpay to do it.
I mean, DeMarcus is having a great year, but what happens when he doesn't have kind of the contract to work for? Like, what happens when he gets the full 5-year boat and does he regress? Does he become, volatile all over again? I mean, what happens when the carrot is kind of taken away? That would really scare me if I was a team offering him a long-term deal. His talent's never been a question, like never. But the motivation to kind of toe the line and play well with others, like those have always been questions with DeMarcus.
Well, years three, four, and five would be my biggest concern.
Yeah.
You're making $35 to $40 million a year.
Oh.
I mean, you're making more than Anthony Davis, if I'm Anthony Davis this summer, and let's say they lose to Golden State or Houston in the first round, I seriously would want to have a big picture as far as how this team is going to get better and for this group to lay it out for me, because to waste the prime of his career winning 43 games is just not good enough. Yeah. not good enough for me.
Let me ask you one last contract question on Isaiah Thomas to go back to Cleveland for a second. I mean, if Isaiah had hit free agency fully healthy after last season, at a minimum, he would have been in line, I think, for a Kyle Lowry type of deal, $30 million per year over 3 years. I think if Boston didn't have a trade option on the table, and if he was a free agent, they couldn't, but they would have probably paid him that amount of money. Now, as he has the hip injury, which I know comes up in the minds of general managers across the league, and as he's struggled early on, and we know about the defensive deficiencies, and teams are already starting to wonder if the Boston system had as much to do with Isaiah's success as the way Isaiah's kind of built to play. I mean, what do you think the market's going to be for Thomas this upcoming offseason?
Well, if I had Isaiah down as if he was a free agent this past summer and without any prior injury with the hip, I had him between like $23 and $25 million. I thought that's kind of what his number would be, a little bit less than maybe where Kyle was. So, and it's still a great contract considering he was making $6.5 million. So,
right,
this summer, factoring in the hip issue, we still don't know how, if he comes back, not All-star MVP Isaiah Boston, but a top starter quality. Chris, I really only think the only landing spot is going to be Cleveland, unless it's one of these teams on a 1-year contract, like a J.J. Redick type contract. Because I look at the landscape of the league and we can go down to a lot of these teams already have good point guards. Okay. Here are the teams that have room: Atlanta, Chicago, maybe Brooklyn, Indiana, Sacramento, Phoenix. Would he go back to Phoenix?
Yeah.
I mean,
I've thought already, about that a little bit.
He's already been there, the Lakers. So when you start eliminating teams, and then Cleveland, because they've got his bird rights. And so
a lot of teams you mentioned too, that already have point guards or a lot of them, to draft them.
Like, yeah. And a lot of them are rebuilds. So who aren't ready to give a 3-year or $70 million contract to a player. I mean, it's all about timing. If Isaiah Thomas was in the class of 2016, I mean, he'd be cashed in right now, but he's not. And it's 2 years removed, and his best bet is to have to finish the season strong, to get his legs under him, to get into kind of prime shape, and to re-sign in Cleveland. Even if it's not LeBron James there from a financial, if he's looking to make money from a financial decision, that's his best bet.
Yeah. I mean, I think you almost have to go back to the thinking of Isaiah before he got to Boston. When Isaiah got to Boston, I thought, all right, he is the sixth man here. Marcus Smart is going to be groomed as the starter. Isaiah is that instant offense guy off the bench. Now he's flipped the script on that, and you give him all the credit in the world for doing it. But you know, if you're a team that's like a winning team and you're looking at Isaiah Thomas, you're looking at a far lower salary and maybe a position coming off the bench. I mean, we talked briefly about Ty Lue, and one of the things I'd say that Ty has to probably consider at some point in the next couple of months, and you mentioned a roster shakeup, but maybe it's moving Isaiah to the bench and maybe putting him with second unit guys where he can have the ball in his hands and make plays. Because you and I both know, Bobby, with the Cavaliers offense, when LeBron's on the floor, it runs through LeBron. It's him with the ball, and that's not how Isaiah's used to playing, and it's not how he's thrived in previous years in Boston.
No, I mean, when they started Calderon, when Isaiah and Derrick Rose were out, I thought he ran the team pretty well. I know there's a lot of deficiencies with Jose Calderon, but now you're like, you know, here's going back to so many mouths to feed. Like, now you get Rose back. Like, what has Derrick Rose earned to have minutes right now?
Nothing.
Nothing at all. And they're a worse team when he's on the court. So why isn't Rose on the bench? Why isn't J.R. Smith on the bench? Guys like that who have not played. Are you basing it on merit from previous years? Because at one time Rose was an all-star. So those are, you know, we're going back to Cleveland, but you know, guys said, you know, they got to look in the mirror here. Well, yeah, you got to look in the mirror, and I think it will get to a point where some of these egos are going to have to get hurt here for the betterment of this team.
Yeah, and that's going to be you know, Ty Lue's call over the next couple of months. Going to be interesting the next few months. In Cleveland. Bobby, always great to talk to you, man. You're welcome back here anytime, even though you've among the dearly departed.
Well, it seems like this is a monthly thing, so I'll have to talk to my agent. Maybe we get our own podcast going. How's that sound?
Yes, yes.
The M&M boys.
M&M or like, who? How about this? Who's got the number one? We'll go with that.
I will look at t-shirts down here that says the Brooklyn pick, and I'll wear it around. How's that sound?
Perfect. I want a picture. I want a picture, and I'll tweet out the picture as soon as possible.
Sounds good, Chris.
Bobby, thanks for joining, man. I appreciate it.
Yep.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Bobby Marks for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.